Welcome to the Nation of Writers podcast, presented in conjunction with our exhibit American Voices, which you can explore in person or online at nationofwriters.org. In this episode, we'll discuss the life and work of poet and author Audre Lorde. Born in New York City in 1934, Lorde was the daughter of immigrants and had a love of poetry from an early age. She would go on to publish many collections of poetry, essays, and speeches that continue to have relevance today. Quoting from the Poetry Foundation, "A self-described black lesbian mother warrior poet, Audre Lorde dedicated both her life and her creative talent to confronting and addressing injustices of racism, sexism, classism, and homophobia." And quoting from the Audre Lorde Project, "Both her activism and her published work speak to the importance of struggle for liberation among oppressed peoples and of organizing in coalition across differences of race, gender, sexual orientation, class, age, and ability." For this episode, we are joined by writer R.O. Kwan, author of the just-released novel Exhibit, who cites Lorde as a major influence. You can meet Kwan in person at the American Writers Museum on June 5th, when she'll be discussing her new novel with us. Find details and get tickets on our website. R.O. is interviewed by Nate King, digital content associate at the American Writers Museum. This conversation originally took place April 23rd, 2024, and was recorded over Zoom.
Well, thank you, R.O., for joining me today on this episode of Nation of Writers. I'm excited to talk about Audre Lorde with you. But first, can you give our listeners a little bit, tell us a little bit about yourself? You have a new book coming out that we're excited for as well. So you could tell us a little bit about Exhibit. That'd be great.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here with y'all. So I'm R.O. Kwan. I'm a novelist and I have a novel coming out on May 21st. And I'll also be in Chicago with the American Writers Museum in June. And the book, the sort of quick summary of it is that it's about women who are seeing how far they'll go to seek liberation in the artistic, sexual, and personal sense is one of the ways that I've been talking about it. There's a photographer who's a Korean woman who becomes obsessed with a ballerina, and things go on from there.
Great. Yeah, I'm excited to read it and see you, like you said, at the American Writers Museum in Chicago on June 5th, I believe is the date. And there's links in the episode description for y'all to check out the book and the event. Hope you can join us. And the description of the book, too, that you just said is also, to me, seems very fitting to Audre Lorde's life and work as well, and her writing. Do you remember when you first encountered Audre Lorde's work?
You know, I was thinking about that, and I feel as though it's hard to remember, because I think my first encounters with Audre Lorde's work might have been, I might have this in common with a lot of people. It probably was, she's so widely quoted, right? Like she's her snippets of her words come up so often. They're very popular on Instagram, on social media. They're very popular on protest signs. And so I think I must have come across snippets before I read like a full book of her work. But in 2017, I believe, I reviewed a volume of her work, and it was a volume of her poetry, speeches, and essays for The Guardian. And there it was published as "Your Silence Will Not Protect You," which is one of her, which is probably one of her best known ideas, phrases. So that was when I started really like delving into her work.
Yeah, that makes sense too, because I would say the same thing about me seeing little snippets, like you said, utilized, which is, you know, a testament to the power of the writing, but also to have such power and such succinct sentences and words to be able to fit on a protest sign but still pack such a punch is quite impressive. When you did that first, reviewed it, and what did you at that time, you know, 2017, we you know, a lot of changes happening in this country, how did you feel in spending more time with her work in that way at that time, mm-hmm. you know, for where you were at in your life as well?
That's a great question. So 2017, right? Of course, what first comes to mind then, especially maybe in relation to Audre Lorde's work, is the shock of 2016 and the elections then. But now I'm reminded that, so I taught a class on Korean literature at Stanford this quarter, and I remember one of my students. She was saying that she just like said as an aside that like that she's surprised about how often people older than her go on about the 2016 elections, and that it's not shocking to her and her friends. And I just was like, oh my God, that's just settled into that whole situation has settled into has settled into I don't quite know what to call it, has settled into being, just part of like the shock has vanished. And I guess that absolutely makes sense, with 20-year-olds. But yeah, but in 2017, for sure, the sort of shock of what had happened was very, very, very present. And I introduced myself as a novelist, and I write a lot of nonfiction, but I still think of myself as a novelist who also writes nonfiction. And part of it is that the day after the elections, I woke up in a state of like grief and fear, as so many people did, and anger, but part of it, a lot of the anger was with myself, because I had been really, I before I had in general, started for a while, been pretty politically involved. But I remember that for the 2016 elections, I was pretty overwhelmed with work, and I hadn't been, I'd made some phone call, I'd made phone calls, like I'd done some work. But I woke up that day, and I remember thinking just like, what else can I do? I had been making phone calls and joining like text campaigns, and I was just like, I don't even I'm not good at phone calls, like cold calling strangers is not is not one of my I don't really like talking on the phone. And then I was like, well, what strengths do I have? Like what because I just wish I had done more. I think that was the anger that at myself that I had. And so I thought, well, I work with words, and I thought, well, maybe I can string together words. I can string together words in a way that might mean something. That much I knew. And so that was when I started writing, on a pretty regular basis, much more, explicitly political. I mean, everything is of course political, but explicitly political, nonfiction that very often had to do with varieties of marginalization. And so I was thinking about that. I think that helped draw me to Audre Lorde's work, and all the ways in which, she says over and over again, well, as the title of that volume says, your silence will not protect you. Here's where I'm going to pull up one of the quotes. Okay, so the titular excerptation of the UK volume of her work, which is incidentally very beautiful for if anyone's in the UK, but the titular excerptation is, "My silences had not protected me. Your silence will not protect you." That idea that speaking out and giving voice to this almost sounds just simple, but giving voice to thoughts and feelings, that has a power, that naming has a power, and that's another part of Audre Lorde's work that has resonated with me a lot, and I know for a lot of people from the very start, is that she turns what I think are historically and in a lot of ways still currently can be considered to be weaknesses, into strengths. And so that and often the weaknesses are things that are coded as being feminine. And so feelings, for instance, the erotic, I'm not, well, I guess this isn't necessarily coded as being feminine at all, but that she talks about the uses of anger. And she turns, and I think I'm going to return to feeling because she she argues so beautifully for the illuminations to be found in feeling, and how feeling has to be part of our thinking as well.
Yeah, that it makes me think of there's another quote of hers that I had from the Poetry Foundation's page on Lord, and it says, "I have a duty," Lord once stated, "to speak the truth as I see it, and to share not just my triumphs, not just the things that felt good, but the pain, the intense, often unmitigating pain."
Yeah.
And I think that goes to what you're saying of how the well, A, to your point of wanting to feel like, what can I do? And you are great with words, so you can use that skill. And we all have our roles that we can play in fighting for, better and more justice. And you much like Audre Lorde use words to do that. And because I think to your point, it is important to say those things because that in that essay, your silence will not keep you safe. Another good part of that is I'm going to paraphrase here a little bit, but of just it might feel scary, or you might be afraid to speak out, and there might be some actual, physical, mental repercussions that come from that. But it doesn't matter in the end. If you don't say anything, you're still gonna. It's still those problems will still have be there, and so you might as well speak your truth and advocate for that. That I love that your answer and your approach to it as well, and finding a little bit of inspiration from Lord, it seems in that moment in 2017 to use what you're good at and then.
And there's something so I don't know. Every time I reread her, I'm just moved again by how I'm moved by the extent to which well, let's put it this way. So I feel like the quotes that people know best of Audre Lorde's, the like snippets of her work that people know best. There's so much strength in what she says. So, like there's also the very well-known line, the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. There's also, I am not free while any woman is unfree, even when her shackles are very different from my own. And I'm not free as long as one person of color remains chained. And so there's so much strength there. And I think part of what I love about her writing is also just how evident her vulnerability is as well. And there's a beautiful part of the one of the US volumes of her work, Sister Outsider, which collects some of her essays and speeches, in which she writes about raising a son. And her son was in third grade and was being bullied by his classmates. She was so upset, of course, by her son being bullied. She found herself, as she puts it, start blaming the victim, she says. And she says, I started to hiss at the weeping child the next time you come in here crying. And she realized that she was on the brink of giving her son Jonathan a lesson in the idea that might makes right. And then, so instead, she sort of takes a moment, and then she says, instead of letting her sort of, instead of letting her own impotence in that moment, and her own anger, and her pain at his suffering, instead of turning that into, a conduit for encouraging her son to create more suffering, essentially, which is a path that she thought she was going to go down. The idea of might making right. Instead, she sort of takes a step back, and she says, she starts telling him that she had after school fights when that she during which she was a child terrified of breaking her glasses, and that she just fled. And she says, not just, she fled. And she said, did I ever tell you about how I used to be afraid when I was your age? And the child is, and she says the child re reacts with relief and total disbelief, because she, and I just it, like that's such a beautiful response to anger and helplessness and sorrow, and the real pain of seeing someone you love suffer, is instead of is to say, I too have suffered like you, and there's something, and I find that to be just I find that to be really powerful.
And important too, because that's another in my research and reading of her work prior to this. She was very focused on the differences. Well, there's differences that we all have, right? Whether it's skin or sexuality or gender identity. But it's and like it's actually appreciating all those differences and paying attention to them is what is, ultimately the most important thing, and what can move us towards a freer world and society. Because within all those differences is that, like you're talking about, a similarity in human existence, right? Of like, feeling, like you said, talking to her son, I've suffered before, and like, and how that just letting, especially a young person, know, yeah, it's okay. Like we're here to, like, together we can, get through this. And to your point about the vulnerability, like that, we're seeing her process this emotional moment, and she's writing about it in a very eloquent and moving way, which made me think of another part I read about her. She said, would you speak in poetry? So, if someone asked her, how are you feeling, and she would like recite a poem that she had memorized or some sort of thing. So the poetry was already how she it that would gave her the language to express her feelings, and then so she's doing that now. She's passing that gift on with her own writing, which I think is really valuable.
And she talks about, and it's something that that matters to me a lot in my own work too, that she believes very much in, like, in the power of naming, in the power of giving words to previously unnamed or unnamed thoughts, feelings. There are so many ways in which I grew up really Christian, and I'm not anymore at all. But there is something really resonant for me in how the Bible starts with how the first thing that humans are really asked to do is in the Bible is to begin naming what's around them. And I think something that I see in that moment with between Audre Lorde and her son Jonathan is and this idea of, I too have I too was bullied, like I too was afraid. I think in some ways when people ask why I write, I think an answer I sometimes give that feels truthful. One of the answers that feels truthful is that books and words have provided fellowship during times when I felt really just desperate with loneliness. There are times when, without exaggeration, books have quite literally saved my life. And I think in a lot of ways with my own writing and both with the fiction and the nonfiction, I want so much to be able to provide some of that fellowship to other people too, and to meet other people in their loneliness.
Yeah, which is a great endeavor, and because I've been there as well. For me, it was a lot of in the early parts of the pandemic. It was, your book was one of them actually that kind of re-triggered my the incendiaries re-triggered my love of reading, because I was like, oh, I could. That's right. This is fun again.
Oh
Like it's
my gosh.
yeah. So
That's like,
so you have
that
you have
makes
literally done that. Yeah,
thank
you
you
have literally
so much.
done
That
that.
makes my day.
Yeah, so yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I know that I don't know about you, but at the start of the pandemic, I had a really disorienting time for about 2 months. I could barely read prose. I think because of just how somehow my brain wanted all the news. I was just like,
Yeah.
hoovering news. And it was terrifying. And it really didn't help to be reading the news for the third hour of the day,
Yeah,
but
right.
and I remember just feeling actually just I'm actually still haunted by that in some ways, because it was for the first time in my life, books were not really, at least prose was not there for me the way it always had been.
Yeah.
And in that moment, thank God, I was still able to read. Poetry was available.
Yeah.
And And yeah, Audre Lorde talks too about in her essay, "Poetry is Not a Luxury." There's this beautiful line where she says, "The quality of light by which we scrutinize our lives has direct bearing upon the product which we live, and upon the changes which we hope to bring about through those lives." And then just a sentence later, "This is poetry as illumination, for it is through poetry that we give name to those ideas which are, until the poem, nameless and formless, about to be birthed, but already felt." I think in some ways, there's a part of me that if I were able, I think I'd be a poet, but instead I'm a prose writer who just loves poetry. I know I'm not a poet though, as much as I read it, because when I memorize poems, for two reasons. When I memorize poems, I can't remember where the line breaks happen, and so I essentially memorize them as blocks of prose. Or I turn
Interesting.
to prose poetry. And the second reason is that I have no feelings for the moon, and truly, I feel as though every poet friend I have has some sort of just like very strong relationship with the moon. I said this recently at a talk,
That's a good.
and a wonderful poet human when came up to me afterward, and he was just like, "You don't have to know the moon. The moon knows you." And I just was like, "Oh my God, you poets and
No,
the moon. I don't
yes. That's
get
good. That's a lovely story.
it." But yeah, I think I what I part of what I revere about poetry is that I think poetry gets even closer to putting words to what can hardly be said. And this is clearly visible, right? In the ways in which it in how often in times of great feeling, and so at weddings, at funerals, at people reach for poetry because of the ways in which poetry gets, I want to say, what is the line? A poem must defy the intelligence almost successfully. I think that's it.
And you, yeah, and it's such a as far as an art form, you're writing art form, it, you know, it's it, I've always loved it as well, because it using the, you know, oftentimes the least amount of words, but it actually conveys such, it distills that, you know, feeling or a certain emotion into, you know, short sentences. Or because I also, it's funny, I also think of poems as blocks of prose, just because that's what I'm used to writing myself. But yeah, the you know, such an economy of words, but yet expressing feelings that are, like, you know, timeless, and the human condition, you know, everyone can relate to that in some way. So yeah. Are you familiar with Audre Lorde's poetry? I know you've read, yeah, you like hers as well.
For sure. Just to correct myself from before, because I, especially with poets, I hate misquoting them. So it's the poem must resist the intelligence almost successfully, not defy. And that was Wallace Stevens. But yeah, no. And Audre Lorde, she described herself as Black lesbian mother warrior poet. Her poetry, her speeches, her essays, there's so much in all those categories of her work.
I want to talk about your work a little bit, and exhibits specifically. You know, maybe was there any sort of, maybe this is a two-sided question, but did you sort of channel Audre Lorde in any sort of, like, conscious way in writing your most recent novel, or and her work, or her writing, or do you think you have, you know, spent enough time with her now that it's kind of through osmosis, you're like, are channeling that a little bit. Does that make sense?
Well, that's a beautiful question. Let's see. So the book exhibit, the about to publish book, it's among other things, it's very queer. It's very kinky. It's very interested in desire and bodies. And There's so many ways for me in which so I'm, as I mentioned, I'm ex-Christian, but I was raised Catholic and then I turned evangelical Protestant. And I was so Christian that my life goal for a while was to be a pastor. I'm also Korean and I'm a woman, and a Korean woman. And so what this means for me is that there are, I feel as though I exist with, I just carry around, I live under a triple heap of shame and guilt around everything that has to do with definitely anything that has to do with sex. There are some ways in which I feel as though there are ways in which my body, perhaps like every cell of my body, feels as though if I ever let on in public that I've ever that I've had sex ever, I might be killed. And there's so the experience of writing Exhibit, and I worked on it for 9 years, involved so many let's put it this way. Sometimes I had what amounted to daily hours long panic attacks, or anxiety attacks. The anxiety attacks were more easygoing. I got so that I can work through an anxiety attack at this point with no problem, which is A, useful, and B, not a skill I ever wanted to pick up. And yeah, writing a book that has so much to do with desire and with sex. It felt like something that I felt very that I felt that I had to do. And there are a lot of ways in which I strongly believe that with my work, I want to walk toward, I believe in fear as a guiding, as a sign for the work, as a guide, as a guiding sign toward what I want to do next. And I believe that in part, again, because of this idea of the fellowship that one can find in books. There are so many times when it went reading when I've come across a thought or a passage and I've thought, oh my God, you too. And it's something that I thought I was alone in. And of course, there's nothing, we're not actually alone in anything. And I don't know of a better I don't know of a better technology than books, than words, that can give me some sense of what it must be like to exist as another person, to inhabit someone else's body and brain. And I so value those moments of fellowship when I'm reading, when I come across something that I would that I thought was a thought that only I had had, and that therefore and that usually comes with shame and guilt. And so I really wanted to, with this book, I wanted to, in every way possible, to push myself to write a book that my 17-year-old self, that would have helped my 17-year-old self, who at various times, for various reasons, really did feel like a candidate for perhaps being the loneliest person in the world. Not like I knew I wasn't the loneliest person in the world. I just thought I could maybe throw my hat into the ring. And I wanted to write a book for her to let her know that she wasn't, that she was never that alone, and that she's not alone now. And that has come with just a great deal of anxiety. And so some of the things, what Audre Lorde says about, just going back to the idea that the silence won't protect you, those ideas are helpful.
I can relate in some ways. I was raised Catholic, and so I, similarly have in my adulthood been trying to, unlearn some of those things and the shame and guilt that is seemingly inherent in Catholicism. So I can totally relate to that, and again, look forward to reading your book because, there's other 17-year-olds out there like you who, like you said, they'll, hopefully pick it up and be like, oh, okay, yeah. I'm not alone in this. They'll find something in there that will then help them become closer to who they are, want to be and are meant to be as people existing on the planet. So yeah, and I love the notion of, well, don't love, but it's the working through that anxiety that the themes of this book and the story you're telling brought out in you, but working through that with the writing itself too, which is I think again, relates back to Audre Lorde as well, just and working through these, and like you just said, complex thoughts and theories of how to exist, but working all of that out in the writing as well, and leaving that for us to also then work our own things out by reading her work, and your work. So yeah, that's a it's a very admirable, certainly I'm sure not easy, but admirable endeavor to take. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it you know it I guess I've been thinking a lot about, so as I was writing Exhibit, I ended up doing some quite a bit of research into Korean history. There's a Kiseng who's a Korean courtesan from who's a ghost who tells parts of the, well, she's there's a ghost, she's channeled through a shaman, and then she tells parts of the story. But as a result, because of that, I ended up spending some time reading about some of the time periods that the ghost would have seen. But
Yeah.
one of the things that really that I hadn't quite known was that, for instance, during the Joseon period in Korea, so that it's not really, it was really not that long ago, it's just like a little over 100 years ago. Is when the Joseon period ended. But during the Joseon period, a woman could be divorced for talking too much. A woman,
Yes.
and being divorced was a was that meant that that more or less meant that you were going to die.
Right.
And
Yeah.
there were rules around. This one wasn't upheld as much, but it was a but the rule was there, and it was upheld by some people. It used to be the case that a Korean woman wasn't supposed to really see people out see men, and certainly outside see men outside of her family. And I think a lot about that when it comes to just how impossible it feels to sh really shake off the shame and the guilt and the anxiety around talking about desire, let alone queer desire, let alone queer kinky desire.
Right.
And I'm just like, I think a lot of my ancestors were they're I think that they're the because I seem to feel almost like a like I hear like shouting inside my body, and the shouting says things like, what are you doing? You're going to get yourself killed. And those, I think those messages are really just are ancestral lessons that are just hanging out in my body, trying to keep me
Yeah.
safe. And I keep trying to tell myself, I keep trying to tell that part of my body and my mind, just, I don't think I'm going to get killed for having written a novel. It's a novel, for
Yeah.
And then, but I can't convince myself. And so part of what has been really, and so while writing this book, I did, it helped a lot to just keep revisiting the work of writers who also talked openly about being afraid of what they were saying, about being afraid of what they were putting into the world. And Audre Lorde is one of these people, because she talks about just like, yeah, this is really scary. And I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And I find that to be useful, because if I can't really talk down the anxiety, and I can't really talk down what really amounts at some points to terror, I can do the thing anyway, though, and that feels useful.
Yeah. And that's kind of random, like what you said about kind of using fear, if you're afraid to do something, then like you just said, like writing Exhibit and also the Incendiaries, I imagine was a similar sort of fear about that story. But that it's like if you're afraid of it, then that story needs to be told. And then it's like again going back to what you said, and because then you can help other people through their fear, perhaps by them reading your work. So yeah, hard, difficult but important fear to work through, and also given the plot line, the plot of your book and the sort of themes of it, do you and the world in which this country especially banning books and censorship, because there's a Audre Lorde has a great quote that I want to bring up. So I'm curious if you are anticipating any sort of bans on your book or censorship issues, or if you have seen them already.
Well, I know that both The Incendiaries and an anthology of short fiction that I co-edited with my friend Garth Greenwell, Kink, both have been banned in various parts of the country at various in various milieu, with the way book bans are going in America right now, I do imagine that is exhibit is going to be that exhibit is going to run into book bans as well. And it's honestly it's painful every time. It's painful every time to be, I don't know, it just it feels, especially given I think my own relationship with books and with literature. And it's probably a relationship that a lot of people, and I mean, it's definitely a relationship that a lot of people have. This idea that books have at various times saved my life because they have helped alleviate what has been at various points a truly sort of like soul-crushing loneliness. And what the book bans are saying is no, your book is somehow going to harm people instead. It's such a painful idea and runs so antithetical to the to what books are, you know? And yeah, maybe actually I'll take a moment. There's an organization that's pretty new called Authors Against Book Bans. So anyone who's listening who is a writer, one of my friends, a friend Maggie Togo Hall is one of the co-founders of it. They just kicked it up in the last few months and they have a much more coordinated approach to fighting against book bans, including, you know, like including like really paying attention to what's happening at school districts, at libraries, supporting librarians, supporting teachers, and they're doing really beautiful work. Would recommend everyone to check it out.
Yeah, great. Yeah, we'll put a link in the episode description for that as
Okay.
well. Yeah, and the quote that I came across from Audre Lorde was, at one point, probably many points, her books were being challenged, and she says, "My sexuality is part and parcel of who I am, and my poetry comes from the intersection of me and my worlds. Any objections to my work, it's not about obscenity or even about sex. It is about revolution and change." So it's like the on the surface, banning these books is, like you said, it'll harm people, and especially young people. But really, it's more of the powers in control wanting to keep that control, and God forbid there's any other new ideas that people read to perhaps challenge what the system they've created. And yeah, it's a very scary time, but it's good for, there's organizations like Authors Against Book Bans. The ALA has their Unite Against Book Bans, I think, is their program that they do, the American Library Association. And then it's us individuals, writers and readers, and really paying attention to, like you said, the small school board meetings and library committee meetings, really paying attention to those. So yeah, I'm glad to hear that the Authors Against Book Bans is doing great work. So I'll definitely share that.
Yeah, and because the people who are fighting these like school teachers and like teachers, educators, and librarians are of course as I'm sure are being fired. You know, like they're losing jobs because they refuse to give in to the book bans, and that's terrible. Like that's terrifying. And so Authors Against Book Bans is also trying to help support the individuals who are being put in these positions. I really love that quote. I believe so strongly that what's really harmful, what really what genuinely kills people. Well, let's put it this way. In writing Exhibit and in putting together Kink and in reading Audre Lorde's work, something I think a lot about is when we deny, suppress, sideline, minimize, try to kill parts of ourselves that we feel that we can't show or really or inhabit because of the ways in which the outside world tells us that no, this part of your sexuality is wrong. This thing that you want is evil or sinful. Denying these like core parts of ourselves, that can be a first violence from which so many other kinds of violence can arise. And yeah, I and you know, shame kills. Shame kills, guilt kills, and loneliness kills.
Well put. That resonates with me strongly. So yeah. Man, thank you for saying that. I needed to hear that, I guess. And as we're getting close to the end here, was there anything else that about Audre Lorde that you wanted to share?
Something else that I love of hers is there's a quote from, there's she says, "I've come to believe over and over again that what is most important to me must be spoken, made verbal and shared, even at the risk of having it bruised or misunderstood, that the speaking profits me behind any other effect." And I find that to be so useful as a writer and as an artist, because inevitably, I just published an essay that has to do with that involved interviewing people who are parents, and if they could go back in time, might not choose to have kids again. And I knew that that was going to be, that was going to be a lot for people. And my and it came out in time yesterday. And my mentions are currently full of, largely I think right wing people hollering about how this means how like anyone who feels ever feels the slightest bit of regret about having about this is a monster, et cetera. But that's part of why I wanted to write the essay, was to counteract this idea, because there are a lot of people who experience regret and love their kids, and it's possible for the two to coexist. And when I think with a lot of what I write, it's I know that there are ways in which what I intended the work to be might not be what gets through to, I mean, it just won't be what gets through to every reader ever. And I guess that's, I mean, that's true of any written work. But this idea of Audre of Lorde's that the act of speaking itself has the word that she used, that it profits her. That I think can be another that has I hesitate to use this word, but I think especially as an ex-Christian, but that has real spiritual strength to me. That's something I think about a lot as I not only write, but also think about putting work into the world, publishing work.
And that the specific word choice of prophets is also very I do like that. I'll have to that certainly going to be thinking about that one for the rest of the day. Well, Aro, thank you again for joining me today. Again, looking forward to exhibit. Exhibit comes out on May 21st.
First, May
First,
21st.
perfect. So yeah, it'll be out soon for our listeners. I definitely recommend pre-ordering it or picking it up from your local bookstore or library, wherever you get your books. And then yeah, on June 5th, Aro will be at the American Writers Museum in Chicago to talk about exhibit. It's going to be a great time, so definitely check that out. There's a link in the episode description there as well. Aro, thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, what a joy to talk about Lord's work with you.
Yeah, Lord's work, not the Lord's work.
Lord's work.
Just to be
Yes.
clear, but yes, no. Thank you again. This has been a blast.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Nation of Writers podcast, part of the American Writers Museum podcast network. If you'd like to learn more about American writers and their impact on our history, our culture, and our daily lives, find us online or come see us in person. The American Writers Museum is open Thursdays through Mondays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., closed on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Once again, thank you for listening, and to all you writers out there, thank you for writing.